Support American-made, tariff-free clothing with American Giant with American Giant. They aren't affected by tariffs because their clothing products never left the U.S. Get 20% off your first order when you use promo code STAPLE20 at American-Giant.com.
Welcome to the MMA Roadshow, episode number 197. My name is John Morgan. Cole Coffee is with me in a very cold Las Vegas. I'm just going to say, we sit here and brag sometimes about how great Las Vegas weather is, and it's still not bad.
Right.
But it is starting to get a little cold, a little bit chilly. This is January is that month where even me start to get a little cold in my shorts. In my cargo
I thought you were going to say, like, even me, I decide to put pants on.
Oh, no. It's not cold enough to actually, you know, get me to put pants on.
What
it's
would just, be cold enough to put you, get you to put pants on?
See, that's not really what comes up as a decision. What comes up as a decision is, since I'm wearing shorts, will I go outside or not? So that's kind of what the decision is. It's not about whether I'll put on pants. I mean, you're getting the shorts.
Wow.
So,
is it because of the Taz tattoo? You always want to show off the Taz tattoo?
No. That's pretty old.
It tattoo is Taz, right?
No, it's Felix.
Felix, that's right. Felix, the cat. You should get a Taz tattoo.
just because now that you've associated with it.
Just because now I've associated your legs with the Taz tattoo.
I appreciate that
he's
recommendation.
A wild man. Taz is a wild man.
My wife's not really into tattoos. I don't think she'd be happy with me getting new ones.
Getting another one?
Yeah. And
John Morgan, you're too old to get tattoos.
Is that my wife's exit?
I guess. Yeah, that was it.
Oh, man, that's funny. So, anyway, we are at the Casa de Cold Coffee. It is a home game, a light week. It is 2019, man.
Whoa.
Happy New Year to you, sir.
Happy New Year to you.
I don't think I talked to you much since New Year. Did you go out and celebrate anything?
No, we did the it's funny because I actually had to wake Heather up before because she had fell asleep on the thing.
Right.
We're getting to that age, I think.
Yes.
No, we made dinner, and then we had a couple bottles of bubbly waiting in the fridge.
Nice.
And then I can always see the stratosphere from the front.
Yeah.
But that particular night, I don't know where you were at, it was super windy here.
Yeah.
It was like really, really windy. So we kind of just if you go out in my driveway, I have it's like a perfect vantage point of looking over at the stratosphere, and the stratosphere always does the countdown where you'll see the fireworks kind of run up on the tens
right
as it's counting down. So we just kind of wedged ourselves next to the garage in between the car to block the wind and toasted some bubbly out there and watched the fireworks. It was actually pretty good. It was about 8 minutes. You know, 7 or 8 minutes, which is typically even like what they usually do on 4th of July. It's
right.
Usually about a 9-minute display. If I would have thought about it right, I probably would have left the door open so I could hear the TV playing the music. Mm. It was just pretty much us yelling a little bit. There were some of the neighbors kind of yelling and stuff. A couple people a street or so over were letting off fireworks. So it was good. We just kind of sat here and did that, and then she proceeded to fall right back to sleep, and I think I played the Xbox for about an hour, and then I was like, all right, here we are, 2019.
Yeah, I think we were asleep by about 12:05, to be honest with you. You know, we made it to the cheers of New Year,
yeah.
And then that was that, man. I'll tell you what, I was an absolute wreck from watching Ryzen the night before, I guess.
Yeah.
We'll get to the card
in a second.
You watched
the whole thing. I only tuned in for the last
bit. I would say we'll get to the card in just a second, but I just want to give a shout out to all those fans in Europe, you know, and even, you know, all of our friends over there that we know. And of course, you know, we've got Abby Subban on our staff. You know, Shabbat Karsandu is with ESPN now, but used to work with us. Simon Head, Per Hodges, all those Europeans over there. I don't know how the hell you watch this stuff, man. I don't think I could be a fan. Like, it destroyed me, man. Like, I stayed up all night. The card started at, like, 10 p.m. Pacific time and got over about 6 a.m. Pacific. So it was about 10 p.m. to 6 a.m., which is a little bit longer than a UFC show. Now, it didn't help that they had an hour-long intermission and an hour and a half-long intermission as well. So they had two intermissions. So that certainly didn't help anything.
And it was the second one was a non-planned one, right?
I think so.
Or was
it was
the
just,
first
it was.
I heard different reasons
it
as to why there was an
that's right. So the first one was announced, basically. There was a very clear, this is the prelim card, this is the main card, we're going to have an intermission here. But the second one was held in order to basically get the final fights in tune with TV in Japan, like when they were going to air. So I guess it was kind of unplanned, but it was always known that these fights had to happen at a certain time. But they got a couple of first-round finishes, and the show was rolling. Yeah. So then they had to stop for an hour and a half. So that didn't
help. I heard it, though. Did you hear? I heard those because Mayweather and the time, they didn't.
That's what some people were saying because Mayweather wasn't there. But what I was told from people on the scene was they had a specific time slot with Fuji TV in Japan, and so they were just syncing up with that basically.
But you think if they knew that was going to happen, that they would say that hey, there's going to be a second intermission at roughly.
It was not fun. But you know what? During that second intermission, this is how funny. It was like, so that second intermission was like 3 o'clock in the morning or something. I was like, I am not going to be able to make it through. So I got up and like cleaned the kitchen and like basically like I did stuff to like basically stay busy.
Yeah.
But yeah, man, it was a wreck. So it was about 8 hours of card. But I mean, a typical UFC fight is 6.5, right? So I mean, it's not like it was that much longer. And you know, if you want to watch a little bit of the press conference or something, if you're a UFC fan, people that have to watch MMA like that every weekend, I don't know how big of a fan I would be if I had to watch a damn thing overnight, man. It tore me up, dude. My sleep cycle was just I don't even know if I'm back to normal yet. It's like 5 days later.
Well, you've never been normal, right?
Well, no, definitely.
But you're right. No, I completely forgot that it was going on the day before, and I actually woke up middle of the night. Was going to the restroom, and then I think I popped up my phone, and I was like, shit, the fights are going on tonight. And I logged in, and it was during the middle of the intermission, so I slept through everything leading up to it.
Brilliant.
Saw the intermission, and I was like, oh, shit, okay, so I'll get up. And it was definitely worth getting up, but yeah, I can see where, man, kudos to those that are diehard. You know, and I guess now you could see why the UFC wanted to go out of their way to give some local time shows, just for the fact that it's brutal, man. It's brutal. But let's be honest. Most Europeans people, they just don't work as hard as us Americans. So usually,
just as a general rule,
because you know everybody seems to be generalizing things today. Americans, it's tougher for us because we work so much harder.
That's what it is.
Exactly. I'm just kidding. We now have no listeners in Europe. But yeah, you're right. That was brutal. And luckily, you know, most of the times my shift doesn't start till like 9 a.m. the next day. So, you know, usually if I stay up a little bit later and sleep till like 7 or 8, it's usually not a big deal. I know you having a kid and usually your shift starts a little bit earlier.
Yeah.
So it's a little bit harder. But yeah, it's tough, man. For these cats.
Much respect.
So we feel for you.
Much
feel
respect
for you guys.
To Europeans. They got my love after this weekend, that's for sure. I mean, I knew they had it hard anyway, but they really got it. All right, so let's jump into this Ryzen card because, you know, it's funny. I remember, you know, in the build-up to it, you were like, I'll just catch some highlights or something. And then I get this message on WhatsApp at like 5 in the morning or 4:30 in the morning or whatever it was. You're like, has Mayweather fought yet? And you went ahead and jumped on. Listen, I gotta say, as it was happening, as it was unfolding, I was starting to get a little bit more excited. I was like, I honestly, until he set foot in the ring, wasn't sure
that it was even gonna
that
happen.
It was ever gonna happen. I really wasn't. But I did cover the whole show. By the way, what a weird setup they had that it was not shown in the U.S., Canada, Mexico, or Japan. So
if you just logged into that Fight TV,
right.
You never even saw the Mayweather option.
That's right.
Like, or what? How it pulled up on mine, it was like had two windows initially, and like the left one said the Risen, and it just had like the Horiguchi Coldwell fight off to the left, and there was a window on the right hand side. It was like, this is not available
in your area.
And I was like, what the hell is that?
So what we had to do, which I'm assuming this, I'm not sure if it's legal or not, but we got on a VPN, which allows you to basically, how would you
mask your IP.
I set mine up for Argentina.
Where did I say? I might have did Argentina as well.
It was one of the first ones on the list.
That's probably why I did it too. I was like, dude, what are the fucking chances?
So their sales in Argentina are really strong. It's gonna look like there are some massive MMA fans in Argentina.
That's hilarious.
I'll tell you what. So I said it. So once you set it for Argentina or wherever you set it up, if you set it for anywhere outside of U.S., Canada, Mexico, and Japan, then you had the option to buy it. It was an extra $10 for just the Mayweather fight. It was a $15 pay-per-view for the whole card, or $25 if you got the Mayweather fight. I will say a funny side effect of me being on that VPN for as long as I was, I don't know what cookie got stored on my computer, but now every time I pull up UFC.com, and I think it's because I had UFC.com open at the same time because I was working on some other stuff like in between bouts. And now every time I open UFC.com, it goes to UFC.com Espanol.
Oh, wow.
So I got some kind of cookie set up while I was on the VPN.
So you don't get that Russian bride thing that I get when I go.
I don't get the – that was amazing. You hit up the – this is the greatest story. So Cold Coffee hits us up the other day in the –
I'm going to look to see if it's still there.
In our team Slack chat, and he's like, is anybody getting the same ad over and over, like every day on MMA Junkie? And it's – what is
what
it?
It's on the rumors page.
Russian brides?
It was like – I think I saved it. It wasn't like a Russian bride, but it was like date of Russian. Russian ladies.
Yeah.
Russian ladies.
And I'm going to tell you, I'm on MMA Junkie all day, every day, and I've never seen this ad. I'm like, we see what kind of websites you're going to, Coco. What kind of cookies you have in your browser that they're trying to deliver the proper advertising to you.
Like, I'll be real. Like, if I'm ever going to go to, like, whatever. Like, I don't even do Tinder anymore. I don't do any of that stupid shit. Now that I have a girl, it's like I just don't look at it or whatever. But I had the only – like, and that's what I was saying about the CNN, because I have looked up, like, Russian collusion and other shit. I've been reading other stuff. Uh-huh. Like, I don't go to, like, a fucking Russian bride, like, .com. I think the stuff's so funny. Uh-huh. Look at But it's so funny because I was like, dude, where are we sending these ads? But you're right. It's got to be a cookie thing.
Yeah,
you know, or something. I don't know if it was just like –
it's like
when
you search for something on Amazon, and the next thing you know, you're getting – advertisements for it on MMA Junkie.
Did you ever, and this was a while back, and I think they maybe changed it. Remember people freaked out, like people were saying that they didn't even use like the Facebook app, but they were talking about things and they talked to people, and Facebook was presenting ads and shit
based on their conversation.
And I think people were figuring out that
Siri's
the Facebook app
to.
Was listening to their just the because you give it permission on your phone to just use
it's
the
listening
microphone.
At all times.
It's listening
at all times.
So like it was delivering shit. Like I remember somebody said they were talking to their grandma about something, somebody that died or something, and all of a sudden like their Facebook was like, and I could be completely wrong, but you get the gist. But it was like sending like funeral ads or some weird shit started popping up on their Facebook, and that's where they're like, what the fuck is going on here? I was just talking about death with grandma or whatever. And that's where they figured all that stuff. But I don't know. I don't know what that made it pop up. But that's why I was just like.
No, who knows? Jeez. What could it possibly
be? But granted, I'll be real. Like, if I'm ever going to look for anything that's seedy or anything when I'm lonely on the road, it's my phone. Like, I don't fuck with that shit, like, on a work laptop. Like, anybody that looks
at – I didn't think about that because my laptop – I own my laptop.
Like, this is a work – like, I don't go to – like, even if I did Tinder, I'm not going to do it for my fucking work laptop. Like, that's just stupid. Like, those motherfuckers can connect
that
to this
stupid.
At any particular point
in
time.
Yeah, that would be silly.
So, like, I'll go on my phone or whatever. And that's why when I saw the ad, I was like, this is fucking hilarious. Like, whatever, you know. But yeah, that was funny when you busted out, like, oh, the website. I was like, oh, shit. Maybe it is pulling cookie. I was like, but the only thing I've looked for lately, swear to God, is just like I've read CNN and I go to Fox just to see about the Russian collusion. Look at you. If Russian collusion was like the blonde in that ad, I get it. I would collude with that shit all day long. Multiple tabs, if you know what I'm saying.
Russian collusion. That's like the new category. That's funny. That's good. All right. So anyway, all right. Let's talk about this Mayweather fight. Because
I completely forgot what the fuck we were talking about.
Thinking back to all my Russian porn I've been watching.
I'm trying to pull up the site and see what it gives me now. Oh, now, lame. It's giving me like some paychecks ad. Lame. Bring back the blonde.
All right, Floyd Mayweather.
I certainly haven't been checking paycheck shit.
No, definitely not. I don't want to talk about that. Holiday season was rough on me.
Oh, yeah.
Who was I talking to? Oh, I'm not going to worry about that. Somebody was talking to the other day. Oh, it was about the whole card moving to L.A. I think it was Dan Shapiro or somebody like hit me up on Twitter. It was the whole like, hey, I'm impressed that the UFC was able to sell out the Forum. And they're like, well, yeah, you got everybody's got that extra holiday money in their pocket. Yeah. I'm like, who has extra money in their pocket at the holidays? Like, if anything, that's what I'm most hurting.
Yeah. Worst case, I got like a food phone like a food card that my mom sent me. Like, here, go to Outback. I'm rolling in some motherfucking Outback card. I think I have a leftover Red Lobster card that she sent me last year. So if I want to blow it up.
Do it over
now. If
Red
I could
Lobster.
Trade, if I could if trade those in for UFC tickets, woo.
Be good to go. All right, let's talk about this Mayweather fight because you did end up watching it. Here's the thing that I am surprised to see coming out of it is how many people are just certain that it was a work.
Ridiculous.
I don't understand. Now, I watched it live, and I haven't gone back and watched the full fight since that. I have seen the clips and that sort of thing.
Oh, I guess we can, right?
That's right. We have it on replay. We just have to hop in our plane and jump down to Argentina.
Argentina!
But I don't understand why people thought it was work. Now, I will say this. When Mayweather came out, and he had, like, the most disinterested look on his face, and he was, like, pawing jabs.
Yeah, but it was that swagger that he was just laughing, and he was, like, talking about, like, oh. I could almost see, like, he was like, man, look how serious he's taking it over there.
Yeah, I thought he was definitely trying to show him up, right? He was like, you know, because this whole thing, he'd been saying, like, right, we're just joking, we're just getting in there and moving around.
I think that's how he worked him right there, was the fact that, you know, even when I asked him that thing, I was like, can he take all rounds? Are you going to try it? Do you have to win all the rounds? You do whatever. And he's like, he could take all of them. If he wants to, he's like,
I don't care.
I don't care. That's where he fucking tricked everybody because he wanted to go out there and make a point. I knew if he was going to go there, he wasn't going to take any losses of any rounds. He was going to literally let the kid punch himself out and just wail on him.
Yep.
But you got the size difference of those two, especially on fight night.
Dude, it was
when
big.
It got was huge.
It was big.
He literally, Tenshin got bullied. This was not a matter of like, you know, oh, I'm going to take a hit and flop. Did you see the tears in his face? You know,
that's what I understand, the whole work
aspect.
If you were trying to work it, why would you get your 20-year-old star destroyed?
Yeah.
I mean, destroyed.
Right.
Why would you set that up?
Granted, it's a loss to the greatest boxer ever in a boxing match. You know, same thing. Look at Connor. It's not like Connor's swagger didn't hurt too much.
Tenshin is 20 years old. You shouldn't think any less of him. The guy is an incredible kickboxer, and he's got some mixed martial arts skills as well. But you put him against one of the greatest boxers of all time in a boxing match. As Floyd said going in, I'm never going to be in a match where everything isn't on my side. He's like, I'm the A side. I set the rules. It's always going to be in my favor.
The kid fought it. He's fought at flyweight. He's fought at bantamweight. He's fought at featherweight. You know, Wiki lists him at 121.
Yeah.
Fellas, come on. Like, what did Connor and Floyd fight at?
147?
Yeah, but typically Floyd probably went in this fight because who knows what he went at the weight. He looked like he was a good 170-ish or more. He looked thick. Like, I guarantee Tenshin probably wasn't far off his typical weight. It was probably, it felt like 25, 30 pound. It looked like a 25, 30 pound difference at least going in there. That was the difference of, remember when Connor fought Nate that first time, his energy level was different, but the punches did so much more damage that he was just like, whoa, what is this that's coming at me? Tension's never felt like that, and let alone those shots. That one shot that landed on the back of the head, we see it all the time where guys take that shot in the back of the head and they lose the equilibrium. Like, his feet literally went out.
Exactly.
This kid is not a good enough actor to do what he did with his legs. Like, that was legit. Stanky leg, fall to the ground, hurt. And then the emotion in his face, I thought two things. I thought, he's so upset, or man, I wish they didn't have my mom held hostage right now that I had to give up this fight, you know, because that's what it would take to get that emotion.
So true.
That was real pain. That was real, like, He literally thought he was going to go in there and be able to stand against him. He bought all the hype, and I think he probably believed the fact that Floyd wasn't really going to work it. Floyd was going to go in there and just use it as a sparring, and that Tenshin was going to be able to go out there and look like the more aggressive fighter. And when he came, you know, Floyd did like what he does, put his hands up, took some shots, and I think it was just like, I'm not feeling anything.
I think as soon as he saw Tenshin come out and throw like a huge right hand to start off, he was like, oh, we're doing this for real? Like, now you're in trouble.
Yeah.
Now you're in trouble.
Oh, my God.
And by the way, I should say Connor and Floyd fought at 154, but Floyd weighed 149 and a half.
Okay.
But, yeah, I mean, I think they weighed in 10 pounds different, but it was the weigh-in with clothes on. I mean, dude, he was way bigger.
Dude, he was so much bigger. Man, when he started working like the midsection, when he dropped – did he drop him with a shot to the stomach?
Yeah, he dropped him with the body.
Lord. When I saw that, I was like, holy shit. Like, Floyd is bringing it. Floyd, went in there with the idea of I'm just going to get in and get out and get the paycheck and sorry for this kid. You know, he gave him good props afterwards, but he led the kid on. He let the kid think that he was going to just spar with him and that was going to be a fun little exhibition.
You were going to come catch him.
But he literally came out there to knock his head off, you know, and
it was brutal. I just don't see the work. I didn't see work for and I get the people. I understand the arguments, but if just nothing else, just why would you set that up as a work? Why would you get your 20-year-old star who you hope to have for years and years and years in the future? Why would you get him destroyed? Not barely lose, you know, not
right.
edged out by the legend. No, destroyed. And then, like you said, the emotion, he would have to be one of the greatest actors of all right. time to ball
right.
the way
if
he did.
Was, if it was a fix, the kid would have just played sad and left and then just went count his money to the bank. He wouldn't have taken it that far. I mean, it's just ridiculous. But I think just the power and the precision of where Floyd, it was like Floyd just had, Tension didn't block any of the shots that did the damage. So having Floyd's precision and let alone being the bigger guy and having power, it was just like a video game for him. You know, it's like he could see hit here, hit here, hit here, knockout, repeat, hit here, drop him. You know, it was just crazy. But yeah, to see in the motion, whatever, there was no benefit for, you know, him to drop it. And in all aspects, he was going to, you know, lose it anyways, but he would have gave a better showing. He would have tried to do a little something, and maybe he did, but nah, man, it was not a fix, man. It was just two people that were in two totally different levels. Which is crazy, because Tension has power. He had great, I mean, watching his, when I go back and
his
look at the open workout.
His highlight reel is insane.
It's insane. Just watching when he opened workout, when he was hitting mitts, it looked great, but that's working with your mitts, man. You know, working against a guy like Floyd made it feel like how I would look like if I walked in there and tried to go with Floyd. Yep. That's what it looked like. I mean, and so I can see where somebody's like, man, he's got skills, but he didn't show anything. He looked like he didn't show up. I think it was just the pressure of the night got to him, and he just didn't get to show up. But I think also the first couple shots rocked him. I just don't think he recovered
I think he never recovered from that first series of shots where he just got – and he tried to get up and tried to rush back to it and, and I guess probably part of
And your team's not going to fucking throw in the towel like that. You got the whole team on the fix. I mean, like, your whole team – they would have let him take more and they would have let it be a knockout.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, maybe they don't want to.
I think, you know, part of it, now that I think about it, in retrospect, part of it is maybe that, you know, the whole three-round thing. I mean, you know going in, I can't waste any time, right? I've only got three rounds. Like, there's no feeling out process. Because when he got rocked, I feel like he should have, like, held back a little bit and kind of – because you could tell he never cleared his head.
Right.
Like, he never recovered. He was just but maybe that whole mentality of like, well, I know I've only got three rounds to work with.
But Floyd didn't give him any room, though, either.
That's true.
Like, when you watch, Floyd was literally, when the ref was checking on him, Floyd was right behind him. I thought the ref would have separated him, made him, like,
push back,
go back a little bit. And he did a little bit.
Floyd wasn't giving him. He's like.
He knew he had a wounded animal in front of him. So, I mean, it wasn't the matter of, I don't think Tension was, like, pushing it. I think initially he did. Then he got rocked. But then it was, Floyd smelled blood in the water, man. He just came at him. It's crazy because I feel like we haven't ever seen Floyd go like that.
No.
Floyd's like, come to me.
Yep.
I'm gonna piece you up.
Yep.
Come to me. But this was, he was like,
I'm chasing you down.
I'm gonna finish this right now. I got a party to go to.
Gotta spend that $9 million.
I thought it was supposed to be so much more than that.
$9 million for an exhibition is not
no,
bad.
But he said it was I thought he made when he said the numbers, I thought it was gonna be in the double digits of it.
Nah. Well,
at least that's what it made it. I'd have to go back and listen, but I swear when we had the presser from the gym, he was talking like it was going to be.
You say it was eight figures? Seven figures would be over $1 million.
I want to say, yeah, he said it was like eight to nine figures.
A decimal point in there.
Something. I don't know.
Not bad, $9 million. All right. But the real MMA attraction of the night, the real fight I think that most people were interested in, Kyoji Horiguchi beat Darren Caldwell to claim the Ryzen bantamweight title, and if all holds true to form, to set up a Bellator title fight as well. And I gotta say, man, Horiguchi. I've been a fan of Horiguchi for so long. I thought Horiguchi was a guy that would have a chance to beat Demetrius Johnson, but I always just thought he got rushed into that first title shot. And I always wanted them to fight again at some point. It doesn't look like that's probably ever going to happen. But gotta say, man, I was impressed with Horiguchi here. Caldwell had him in some trouble early on, and the wrestling was working very, very well for him. And Horiguchi definitely benefited early on from the ring. You know, there were a couple times where basically his arm was outside of the surface where he would have been trapped against the cage. It would have been tough for him to move, and he had some room to work. But, I mean, surprising finish to get the guillotine choke. But overall, I mean, I was just impressed with Horiguchi. Even though he was losing the fight up until the moment he won it, I was impressed with what he was showing it. And I won't say I wasn't impressed with Darren Caldwell. I don't think this is Caldwell's best performance ever. I do think maybe this fight goes a little differently in a cage, though. I think if this thing does happen in Bellator, I think maybe this goes a little different in a cage.
It was weird. I thought he did a good job at first adjusting to it. The whole thing when they sort of went through the ropes and then they stop him. All right, now slide over a little bit, slide over a little bit. It was just weird. And, I mean, I get it. You got to do it, but I agree. I mean, Caldwell was, I wouldn't say easily, but he was dominating. You know, he did seem a little bit, I don't want to say the word was like sluggish at first, but once he started getting going, I mean, like, he was damaging him, and I think he just got caught. But, man, I thought he looked good up until that point. And he was so, I mean, I was surprised that he like ran out right afterwards, ran out of the ring and left. So you could tell he was upset about it. But I agree. I think in the cage, I think it'll go just how it started. And I think with not having to stop and lose momentum and reposition and all that other shit, I think Horiguchi doesn't have an opportunity to kind of, you know, react to some of that stuff because, you know, he'd be taking elbows or something along those lines. But again, you get caught and you get caught in a submission. I mean, you got to be wary of it, but it was good. It was a good fight.
It was a good fight. And more than
anything, I felt bad for Coker sitting there in that front row watching it all.
That's the thing. See, that's what I took out of this fight more than anything. I mean, you know, props to Darren Caldwell for going over, to fighting in somebody else's rule set, to fighting in a ring versus a cage, which is totally different. You know, we've seen it. We saw how, you know, how people have struggled over the years to make those adjustments going from one way to the other. But that's what I take most out of this, is that I thought it was so cool that Scott Coker allowed this to happen, and then obviously he's there ringside. He's got to watch his guy get beat, and does that make him, you know, have second guesses next time of saying, that didn't work out so well for me last time. I'm not sure I want to do this again.
Yeah. I mean, what's nice is the fact that the fighters were into it, you know, the organizations were into it. So even though, I mean, he definitely I guess his star took a loss, but still, I think giving him that opportunity to do it, and the fighters were into it, you know, I think it'd be great if he did win, because then you'd feel the same thing from the, you know, from the Ryzen side. But I loved it. I thought the whole cross, you know, promotion thing was good, and I mean, makes me want to see it again. You know, kudos to Horiguchi. Yeah, it was great.
It's exciting. I do hope they follow through on the plan, which would
be shitty if they don't. I mean, it's like, bro, you said that we could do an immediate rematch, which they should have just said right off the get go. They were immediately running back anyways.
True.
Like, who's gonna
a home and home series?
Yeah, like, who's not gonna do it? I mean, it's the same thing that happens like Ohio State a lot of times. They'll check their schedule, but they'll schedule like an off schedule somebody the year before, and it's like, oh fuck, USC, we got to go to USC. But it's like, oh yeah, they're coming to our place next year. And it's like, that's awesome. You know, you get to see it and you get to anticipate it and know that it's coming. So the fact that they're like, all right, well, you know, we can pull that rematch clause, like, who wouldn't? Unless it was so bad that you're just like, I don't want no more of that, you know, like, why schedule it? But I don't see why they wouldn't do it, but that was awesome. I mean, I had a lot of fun, even though I was tired as shit getting up watching it.
Oh,
it was worth it.
I was hurting. Ayaka Hamasaki claimed the women's super atomweight title. She looked impressed with that. Yuri Prochaska, who is a guy from the Czech Republic that I've heard a lot of people say should maybe come to the UFC for that card in Prague. I don't know if there's going to be time enough for them to make that happen, to turn it around, but he looked impressive. And Brandon Halsey, if you haven't seen this one, it's worth it, because it's one of the more odd fights you'll ever see, because Brandon Halsey is basically like throwing himself out of the ropes. And it's definitely worth checking out just for the sheer weirdness of it. It was definitely the oddest fight of the night, other than maybe, of course, Gabby Garcia, but it feels like every Gabby Garcia fight is a bit of a weird fight.
How bad was that?
She's just massive. I mean, she just dominated her countrywoman there, Barbara Nepomuceno.
Who was zero and zero?
Yeah,
she was a
kickboxer, and she had similar size, but even she was.
Was she?
Well,
this picture makes her look cute.
As similar a size as you can get to Gabby Garcia.
Yeah, Gabby Garcia is huge. This says she's 5'10". What is Gabby? I'm just going off the Tapology stats. Says Gabby is 6'2".
Yeah, I was gonna say. I think
a little bit of a
difference. And she was like 225. I think she had like 15 pounds on her. So,
wow.
But yeah, she just threw her to the ground, got inside control, and key locked her. It's impossible.
Zero.
No
That's
can
a
defend.
Tough professional debut.
No can defend.
Holy cow.
Our guy Damian Brown picked up the win over Darren Cruikshank. Typical beatdown Brown fashion. He was taking some damage on the feet, getting rocked a little bit, and then was able to get the guillotine choke when Darren Cruikshank shot in on him. So that was good to see. I always like Damian Brown, man. He's always been a good dude to talk to. So happy to see him out there. And some interesting submissions on the prelims. Kazuyu Miyata picked up the hammerlock submission over Erson Yamamoto. If you haven't seen this highlight, definitely do it. It's brutal, man. He gets the arm pinned behind the shoulder and then cranks up on it and just putting incredible pressure. I mean, it looks painful. And when he lets go of the hold, like, the arm's kind of stuck there. The referee has to kind of pull it around there.
Ouch.
And then Johnny Case just busted up Yusuke Yachi. The right eye was, I mean, just nasty.
Oh,
there.
I did
just
see that.
Oh,
I did. Well, I saw the highlight.
Yeah, Johnny Case was just picking him apart there. Yuki Matoya with the TP choke submission of Justin Scoggins. We've always been a Justin Scoggins kind of a show here, and he unfortunately got tapped there with the rarely seen TP choke. Oka Sasaki looked fantastic at picking up a decision over Mano Kapi. I like Sasaki, man. So
yeah,
it was a fun card, man. Overall, it was a fun card. It's just, goddamn, 8 hours.
That's long.
Overnight. Should say, by the way, we didn't pick any fights on that, but this year winding up, you are the champion. The 2018
Cue the
MMA
queen.
Junkie.
I picks am the champion. That's crazy, right?
Crazy, man.
Out of nowhere,
year.
First year, man. Just it was a sleeper. It was a sleeper sort of role. I didn't start great, but towards the middle to the third part of the season, I think I definitely caught up, and then the end of it. Thank you.
I'll clap for that. I'll applause.
And then end of the season, yeah. Then it was just holding on for dear life. But no, it was good. That was fun.
You get the little gold thing next to your name.
I was like, when's the trophy presentation? When do we see the email? Like, I've heard nothing. I'm almost like they're just like, fuck Kenny. We're not sending out a message to say you won or whatever. I have no idea. This is the first year I've taken part in it.
I don't think we usually do anything. It's really just for bragging rights.
Yeah, just unceremonious. But just like, I'm just waiting to next year. The first
pick,
I'll see the little
trophy
icon.
You get the little trophy next to your name.
2018 champion.
It's pretty solid work, man. I've always been like,
I did pretty good numbers.
I think I was second 1 year, and then I'm usually like third or fourth. I mean, I'm usually like the top knob. Never won it, man. So I'm jealous.
I had pretty good percentage. I was over 50%.
The true MMA expert at the table. It's really cold coffee.
The answer is just go with your gut and who's cuter. That's how I pick.
You look at the two guys and figure out which one you think is cuter?
Fucking don't.
What a bizarre pick process.
I'm like, whose names rhyme with candy cane? And that's the pick. That's nobody. I'm just making
I like Cain Velasquez because it reminds me of candy cane.
It reminds me of Christmas, and Christmas makes me happy, so Cain Velasquez. I like turkey, and this guy
Poor Dan Toms watching like 12 hours of footage a day, you know what I mean? Just breaking down
that
the intricacies.
That was the dude I was watching. I was like, man, I got to catch up to Dan Tom. And when I finally caught up to Dan, then it was like, that was a dude that I was so focused on, like, what's Dan's pick? Like, afterward, like, when I was watching the fights, I'd have staff picks open. I'm like, all right, who did Dan pick? I'm like, all right, who did I pick? I'm like, okay, I really got to watch this fight, you know? So every time I got one back, I was like, yes. So it's good. I didn't see what the final numbers. I think I pulled it up by like 10.
That's crazy.
Or pretty close. I didn't do so well with PFL. I didn't do so well with PFL. I think I went maybe 2 and 3 or 3 and 2.
Yeah. Well, there were six of them. So
six. Well, then 2 and maybe 4 or 3.
Like
and
one,
three.
You just didn't turn in a pick.
I know I did Palmer and I did Lins for sure.
Right.
And then I might have picked up one other one. If not, I might have went 2 for 4. That was rough. No, and I got I didn't pick Cooper. I went with what was it, Megamid Karamov?
Yeah, Megamid Karamov.
So I think that was it. I think I went 3 and 3 on that day.
I didn't do great there either. I had Vinny. I thought Vinny would beat Sean.
So did I. Man.
Vinny was exhausted.
He was just done for. Man, O'Connell just kept coming, man. And he was
just coming in his face.
And he wasn't going to stop.
Shout out to Bobby Green.
But, yeah, that was impressive.
You know what sucks? Because that was the final I was most torn about. Well, I was going to say, let's get into World Series. Or World Series. God damn. Let's get into PFL.
Yeah.
No,
same thing.
Same
except
thing.
Except for the million-dollar paycheck.
I love, man. This was the moment we were waiting through all year to build to this moment where guys were getting million-dollar paychecks. And you said it. Right off the bat, you get Lewis Taylor. And, I mean, how amazing is that
awesome.
For him to finish it the way he finished? But, man, that his celebration, you know, my house is paid off now, you know. Girls, your school is paid off now.
That was pretty cool.
That is exactly what I want to hear, you know. Yeah. Like, dude, this changed my life. Now, look.
The shot of the family immediately afterwards was great. Like, you saw the wife. The wife immediately ditched the kid. She wanted to run into the ring. And I could see at one point where you saw, like, Ray was like, hold on. But you saw – then it flashed back to the kids. One kid completely grasped it and was, like, super happy. The other one – was kind of like happy but teary. I think it was more of like dad won,
right.
You know, but not really grasping the fact of what it meant. But when they were in the ring and he said like the house is paid off, then you hear like the wife sort of just like laugh and agree with that. And then it said the kids thing, and that's when you really look at the kids, I think they grasp like what this meant for their life. Like,
it's life changing, you know. It's
completely life changing.
Even
after taxes,
that's it. It doesn't
mean still hugely life changing.
It doesn't mean you never have to work again.
No.
It doesn't mean you never have to compete again. But just to know, I mean, think about it. If I could right now get rid of my mortgage payment.
Right.
That takes a huge difference in the amount of money I need to make to survive.
You feel like
each month.
You win the lottery just right there.
If Eli's college was paid for, if I know his college is done,
shit, you gotta worry about his high school,
oh,
son.
Oh, I know. Let me talk to you about it. Man.
You're already skipping his private schooling.
Yeah, public school in Las Vegas is not necessarily the best.
No, so I mean, God love you if you're
we're
a listener
for some
and you're
kind
in
of scholarship.
Yeah, like. From when that was one of the first things when I moved here, people were like, the school system is not great, you know, but
yeah, so I mean, to for a guy's life to be changed, man, I thought that was awesome. So that to
and
start to show
guy,
off that way,
six different motherfuckers,
six different guys, fantastic. Lance Palmer, you know, I
like Palmer.
Steven Seiler a lot, but Lance Palmer, I just, you kind of knew
big respect to Seiler. I mean, he always been a fan of him, and I loved
he's
him when
a good
he was
dude,
in the
but
US.
Lance Palmer is a beast.
And
I know,
he's a Buckeye, man. I'm die hard.
Of course, you got his back. You actually shot him in college.
Yeah,
we talked about before, but you actually overlapped his time there.
Yeah, it was awesome. So I got to see him as a senior there. I actually did like his senior year like video highlight for like the banquet, you know, there. So
that's funny.
So when I first saw him getting in the MMA, I was like, dude, I wondered if I was ever going to see like a Buckeye, you know, at least somebody that was there when I was there go through it. So yeah, I'm diehard Palmer fan. It's hard for me. I mean, I can pick against him. I probably won't usually just because it's my buck I love, but I was super happy for him. But that was a good fight, man.
It's not a lot of people I'd pick against him, man.
That was a good fight.
Lance Palmer's tough. You know, he's training out Extreme Couture now, so that kind of adds to it. He's a Vegas guy as well. Nathan Schulte surprised me over Rashid Magomedov.
Did not pick him. Good for him.
I thought Rashid from the very beginning of the year was probably going to win that tournament, so I was surprised
but
to see that one.
Schulte's beast, dude.
Is,
like,
man.
After watching him and just seeing him come forward,
he's a guy
I have
pay attention
so
to
much respect for him.
Yep.
Was he undefeated going in, or
I think
he has a really, really good record.
He had one of the ones. He was one of the guys that had a draw in the quarterfinals. I remember he had a draw with Johnny Case, but then you get the first round win or whatever.
Okay.
So he didn't lose on the way.
He is definitely somebody that you need. I will make a point to
I agree
to keep an eye on him. I was so impressed with his performance and. Dude, he's a beast, man.
He is. Sean O'Connell beating Vinny Magalhães. This was the one I was most torn on, man, because obviously Vinny has been a Vegas guy for a long, long time. You know, I see him at Extreme Couture. You know, a guy that has admitted he kind of probably squandered some of his prime because he was kind of lazy at the time, but he was really focused and dialed in, and he'd be on a hell of a run. But then you have Sean O'Connell, who is just a good dude, man, and he was in some great scraps in the UFC. You know, not necessarily the most naturally athletically gifted dude or whatever, but just, you know, nose to the grindstone, you know, just gonna come at you and not back down, is willing to get. I heard it there. I started to catch
it's
myself.
It's like we've ruined that whole phrase now.
Totally ruined that. He's willing to get in your face.
He's really there. You go. Yeah. Get in your face.
No, right, but you know he's throat, a tough and right, he's always been such a good dude. He's entertaining. You know what I mean? He's a radio show host. He always has the funny weigh-in gimmicks where he's, you know, doing something. It's good. So I was torn on this one, but I thought Vinny was going to be too much. But Sean O'Connell showed his durability, showed his grit, and was able to last through some difficult positions with Vinny. And then it just became, you know, it was clear that Vinny had nothing left to give, and they waved off the fight.
Yeah.
And Sean O'Connell won $1 million and then retired. I mean,
was that him? Was that Vinny's decision, or was his corner?
Yeah, I mean,
because I don't know if he muttered something and was just like, I'm done. And then
I haven't talked to him since then. I'm actually going to go over there in a little bit, and maybe I'll see if I run into anybody over there. I didn't see the audio between them or hear the audio between who kind of made the call, but I think it was pretty. I mean, I didn't have a problem with it, I'll tell you that.
Yeah, no, I mean, he was having a hard time getting up off the ground a lot of times. I mean, like, I thought Sean did a great job of kind of recognizing that and then sort of by asking for him to keep getting up and then seeing that time. That just, the ref sees that every time, and I'm sure that was weighing on his mind. So, like, he was in a bad, bad spot. But, yeah, I just couldn't remember because I tried to watch it, and I was trying to see if I could see the moment where they was like, I'm done or whatever, and it was just kind of, you had all the people kind of coming in there, so I wasn't quite sure if it was a corner because, you know, even going to, like we talked about the tension thing, I think corners now are doing a better job of taking an active role to protect their fighters, which they should. I could see where it's there to push them beyond what they know they can do. You know, I think if you have that relationship and you know, like, man, Kenny's just going to be an asshole. I know if I tell him, get off your fucking chair, you can go in there and do it.
Right.
But there's a point where it's like you have to realize that you're supposed to help protect your fighter as well, almost protect him for himself. So I wasn't quite sure if this was one of those moments.
So true, man. It's such an interesting dynamic because you have to make that decision. I mean, you don't want your guy to have a – you know, if the guy's having a moment of mental weakness and you know you can snap him out of it, you know, then you want to help him snap out of it. But if it's a legit – just they can't physically go anymore, and there's no reason to send them out there and risk brain damage,
who's
risk long-term injury.
Raquel Pennington. Raquel Pennington was probably one of those ones where she was like, no, I was fine. I'm glad like they know what to do or whatever. If she was upset, she probably would have said something after the fact, you know. So, but yeah, I mean, I don't know. It's weird. Maybe 2019, maybe this will be the year where we see maybe more of an active role where people are doing those sort of things, you know. Playing, doing what they're supposed to do, I guess.
Yeah,
it's a tough balance.
It's a difficult argument because, you know, from Vinny's perspective, I mean, you could go out there and lay on the ground and happen to catch his leg, you know, Imanari roll into him, you know, a la Ryan Hall, BJ Penn, you know.
Oh, wow.
But, you know, it's...
I don't think he had the energy to do that one. That was nuts.
I don't think he could either. Philippe Lenz, TKO over Josh Copeland and Magomed Karimov. Got the surprising win there over Ray Cooper III, who had been kind of the Cinderella story into it.
He certainly wanted, man. Watching him in the backstage, man, you kind of wanted him to win it. You could see, you know, what it would mean to him and his family. But yeah, it was a good fight. But it's kind of hard, man. It's what a sport, man. You see so much of this stuff where you see their families, you see the people that are immediately affected by wins and losses, and you just want everyone to win, but you know that everyone can't win, and it's I don't know, it's weird. Maybe it's as I'm getting older. I mean, fuck, I watch some commercials sometimes and I get moved. That's how ridiculous. So when I watch sometimes like fighters and you watch it and you see this stuff, man, it's hard to not be affected a little bit by it and not feel bad because you realize the hard work that they put into it, you know. And that was another one, you know, just I think buying into the story and buying into the Cinderella part, you know, we were certainly hoping for it or playing it up in stories, you know, it would have been a nice ending. So to see it end that way and you could see the loss and see it reflecting in his face, it's just like, fuck.
It's so true, man. You know, the one that I guess probably registered for me most recently was Brian Ortega.
Yeah.
You know, we were in Toronto and, you know, Ortega, you know, I got out there for cage side to see that fight and I stayed after, you know, to get some film of the guys walking by. But, man, Ortega, you know, who's been so good to us on the show, yeah, has been a good friend of the show. Man, he was just physically beat up, you know what I mean? And you know what that fight meant to him. So you, yeah, see not only the physical condition that he's in, but also, you know, the heartbreak and the mental thing that they're, yeah, going through, and they got to walk by you. And, you know, we kind of made eye contact real quick, and you know, I was just like, hey, man, keep your head up, you know, because that was amazing. I mean, obviously he showed heart in that, you, yeah, know, but it's hard to watch. And it's one reason I always say, like, I love shooting those little videos of, like, guys to the winners as they walk past. I won't shoot the losers, man. I feel like,
yeah,
you know what I mean? Like, it's just their lowest moment, man. And, like, don't necessarily stick a camera in their face right,
yeah,
there.
Yeah, especially if you, like, build up a little bit of a relationship, just seeing them over and over. Yeah, there's times where it's like, you want to clap for him. You want to like thank him, you know. But you know, you're not really supposed to clap on the press row. You're not trying to show favoritism. Sometimes you just want to reach out and just give him a handshake. Give that like hand over hand cup it and just say like, brother, thank you, or sister, yeah, you know, thank you for giving what you did out there, you know. And it's crazy. Sometimes you just want to give him a hug because like I get it, you know. I get what you're feeling, and man, it's a crazy sport.
It is a crazy sport.
Crazy sport.
And to prove how crazy it is,
Nemirov?
Let's talk about UFC 232.
Were you going to pull out some honey pepper?
Shout out to Nemirov. Yeah. I believe we got a little bit more vodka heading this way to,
yes,
the MMA Road
do.
Show,
do
we? So
yes,
I guess you
do.
Didn't scare him off. I guess you didn't scare him off. Either A, they respected the honesty, or B, they just didn't listen.
Or they just didn't listen.
It was one of the two, but they're sending,
like, oh,
us some more
gonna
vodka.
We're going to send you some original vodka and some of our honey pepper. So, I'm like, oh, I can't wait to try it. I've been seeing Nemirov all over the place.
Too great.
Good too shit. Great.
All right, UFC 232. Should say, by the way, wanted to do an and a half episode. We were there. We were there in L.A., but we basically were both working until we had to go.
I would say I didn't stop working.
So here's my plan in 2019. Starting with Brooklyn, I booked an 8 p.m. flight out of Brooklyn.
Whoa.
That's right.
8 p.m. the next day?
8 p.m. on Sunday night. 8 p.m. on Sunday night. So I gave myself plenty of time because you know what?
You're just going to be sending me all the damn shit to edit anyways.
Well, somebody's got to record it. I mean, it's not that hard to edit, right?
No, I meant like the footage from the night, the fight night stuff.
Oh, no. Come on, man. I'll be producing that on site. But I definitely want to get – and this is my commitment to the Roadshow listeners in 2019. I want to get back to doing as much and a half content as possible because I love and a half content as possible.
One more time.
And a half. Because I love the post-fight content. I know as a fan, as a consumer, like that's kind of what I want as well. But I'll just be honest with you, and you can line it up on a calendar pretty easy. Once we lost Dan and we were a man down, the way that schedules changed and responsibilities changed, it's just gotten tougher and tougher and tougher, you know? But I want to get back to it because I enjoy doing it and I love doing it. I think people dig the post-fight content. I know they do, and I always appreciate when people hit me up on Twitter or whatever and say, hey, man, thanks for doing that. So starting with Brooklyn, I am booking later flights out. I've talked to my wife.
Whoa.
I've told her it means a little more time away from home, but she is understanding, and we'll get back to doing more and have content this year.
That's
so,
good. Good stuff.
But I did want to talk to you about UFC 232, since we didn't get to talk about it that night. It was a crazy week, you know, being the holiday week that it was and everything changing, you know, switching from Vegas to L.A. last second. But I want to get your impressions, man. John Jones defeating Alexander Gustafsson pretty handily, to be honest with you.
Yeah.
You know, I think it was clear that Alex wasn't at 100%. I mean, certainly seeing him limp into that press conference, you could see how bad. I mean, did you see him?
To be fair, Jones limped in as well.
He did, but did you see Alexander Gustafsson struggle to stand up after he was done? Or you might not. So you might have been turning off your camera because you're trying to flip things right away. So Alexander gets done. And he's sitting there, and of course he's admitted, you know, he's got a groin problem, but he's trying to get up. But obviously with his groin hurt, you know, you can't put a lot of pressure on it. So he's basically like trying to like rock himself a little bit on the chair to get some momentum to get out of the chair. It took him a good like maybe seemed longer than 10 seconds, 15 seconds maybe to like get out of the chair because he was in such pain. I was wow. like, wow, that, yeah, that no, goes to show you. So, you know, impressed by John Jones here. I thought John Jones, maybe not an overwhelmingly dominant fight, but certainly a strategic masterpiece. I mean, I thought he
was pretty dominant.
Yeah, I mean, I guess when I say not dominant, I guess it's not like he went in there and just beat the shit out of Alexander right. Gustin, but from a tactical right. standpoint, completely dominant, right? Yeah. He didn't allow Alex to do anything.
No, his game plan was good. I mean, he did what we said. I mean, just the way that he gets into a situation and is able to kind of flow from one thing to not, you know, to another.
It's incredible.
But I mean, it came down to just like we talked about, like the Jones that fought prior to the Jones now, so much more thought and just maybe preparation in his game for this particular version of him. Like he made the first version look like this young, naive guy that just happened to do well when he went in there. Right. This was a guy that had been working to hone his craft, and let alone came in with a little bit of a chip on his shoulder, which is definitely never a good thing. But man, he looked night and day so much better. I mean, even the Jones that came off of a break that fought OSP would have got his ass whipped by this version of Jones. Yep. Just two totally different things. So I think whatever mental switch that's went in has finally taken place in his head, at least for these fight weeks where he really prepares, or fight camps that he really, really seems to be preparing, he's on a whole nother level. I mean, it's just
it's
scary.
It is scary
for like anybody else in that particular division.
It is scary. I just don't see who beats him other than himself. You know what I mean? As cliched as that may sound, I mean, John Jones is just incredible. So yeah. So here's what I wonder is what you want to see next, because I kind of like I just don't think Daniel Cormier ever beats him at light heavyweight. And I don't know if Daniel Cormier beats him at heavyweight, to be honest with you. I'm not sure. I think if you're going to do it, you do it at heavyweight. But here's what I'm getting at. You know, he said afterwards, because he said, look, you know, daddy's home, DC, come and get this belt. And I asked him point blank at the press conference, well, you know, if you were trying to smash somebody's legacy, like, wouldn't you move up to heavyweight and take his belt there too? And I kind of liked Jones's answer where he said, listen, man, this is not personal to me. I'm not trying to go steal everything he has. I'm not trying to take everything away from him. I just want him to admit that he was never the light heavyweight champion, that I'm the light heavyweight champion, you know.
That's kind of taking something away from
it. It is, but I mean, like, it is taking something away from him because you're right. I mean, that's part of legacy, right? Like, you're only the second guy to be a champ or whatever. Like, I get that. But I think it would be more personal to go like, hey, you know what? Bitch, I got your light heavyweight belt, and now I'm going to get your heavyweight belt too. Like, that to me would be personal. And I kind of like the idea of DC being able to stay heavyweight champion and maybe fight Brock Lesnar. And you know, I like the idea of, as John said, you know, DC being able to have something of his own as well. You know, because DC is one of the greatest to ever do it. He just happened to do it in the same division at the same time as John Jones, who may be the greatest to have ever done it. So I like the idea of him saying that, you know what, I'm not really interested in going up to heavyweight. I don't want to mess with him. Let him have that little piece of himself.
But I want to mess with him, so come back down.
Yeah, but yeah, come down to me. But at the same time, I just don't see how the UFC doesn't try to make that fight happen. I mean, John Jones versus Anthony Smith, John Jones versus Corey Anderson. No disrespect to those two guys as contenders who put together great 2018s and who are making legitimate cases for themselves on paper. But does either one of those fights do one tenth the pay-per-view value of
you could add them both together and you're not even
close,
touching,
right? I mean, a trilogy fight between Jones and DC, but I don't see DC moving down to light heavyweight being a good thing. I just don't see that fight going any different. I feel like if he's healthier and bigger and gets to do it at heavyweight, then maybe it's more competitive there. So
yeah.
I respect John Jones for saying, hey, DC, do what you got to do, man. I'm here at light heavyweight if you ever want to get a piece again.
Yep.
But I don't want to see. I think I want to see John Jones go to heavyweight and do the trilogy fight at heavyweight.
I agree. I agree with you. I think when DC vacated that belt, I think he, in a sense, was saying he made peace with it. I think he made his peace with his time with John as the champ. DC is not going to go back down to light heavyweight to fight for that. I mean, he's done it twice. I think if anything else, but I also don't believe that Jones won't go up to heavyweight to fight him for it.
Right.
I think if that's the only way the UFC is going to make that fight happen, and I know that they want, I feel like they want to make that happen, I think Jones will go up to heavyweight. Why not do the champ thing? He might say it right now, but it could be even just head games that he's playing with Daniel right now. Like,
right.
Get comfortable. I'm not coming up here. Think about coming down here. Oh, just kidding.
Change your mind.
I'm coming up, you know. So I still don't think that that's a done deal. I could see him still going up and doing the heavyweight. I don't see DC coming down. I think DC's done with it. I think he's done with light heavyweight. I think when he vacated, he made peace with it. Because like he's always said even before, like, these belts can come and these belts are gone, but you're never going to take away the fact that I was the champ.
Right.
You know, so I think by him giving up, he was like, it's done. That thing's done. I mean, go for these big ones. But if the Brock one, which sounds like it won't ever happen, this is and he wants one big final payday. Fighting Jones at heavyweight is that final big payday that he's going to get.
I agree, and I don't.
But as for when you talked about Smith and Corey, love the dudes. I think they're good. But one, if Alex got destroyed like this, I hate to say it. You know, if I put Alexander against either one of those guys, I would pick Alexander.
I would agree.
9 out of 10 times.
I would agree.
So the fact of what happened to him, I don't see why that wouldn't happen. Granted, those guys do have a slightly different skill set. But when it comes to Anthony, he's got power, but that it's a striking. And, like, if you're going to go striker versus striker, John Jones and Anthony Smith, love Anthony to death, and he's got good power, but I think Jones just pieces him up, and I think he's just too dynamic. He moves way too good. I mean, I think the different stuff that would be coming at him would just be too much for him. And Corey, you know, I mean, while he has great wrestling and things of that sort, like, wrestlers don't fare that well against Jones.
Nope.
You know, so I just, until you find somebody that is a freak of nature like John Jones right now, like you said, John Jones is his only real competition to defeat himself.
So true.
You know, at this particular point, you know, if he keeps going his trajectory right now, holy cow.
I mean, he could rack up some numbers.
The numbers that he could put would just be ridiculous. So
I just and I guess the other thing, too, about him moving to heavyweight is just and it's no – again, it's not just Anthony Smith. It's not just Anthony Smith.
It's just a one-off.
Like, what other fight is out there? I mean, like, if Dominic Reyes gets a couple more wins, maybe you're talking about him. I mean, Maheta at light heavyweight, if he has a couple more, you know, big knockouts, then you start saying, well, we need John Jones in there with a power guy that could potentially knock him out.
Yeah.
But there's just nothing that's going to get you the type of numbers that a trilogy fight with Daniel Cormier is going
to
get.
I mean, and that's no offense to the guys that are at the top of the division. Oh. It's just that heat is real. I mean, that dynamic, that fire that people just love watching, and there's something about those two when you put them in a room, and it is just like two magnets pushing against each other. There's some sort of legit scientific force of nature that is taking place when those two get in a room that they just literally – They hate each other. And as much as you might be like, oh, Jones is a cheater, man, I want to vindicate the division, I'm going to go in there and destroy him, that's just shit talking.
Yep.
That's not real, like, heat like these two have had. I mean, like, these two have taken it to certain levels. I mean, they've even now have gotten it to where they brought in the wives.
Oh.
I mean, like, they fucking went down areas that you normally just like, bro, please don't go that way.
Yeah.
Just say he's a bad dresser, that he's overweight. You don't like his haircut, you know, but leave his wife and his flat ass out of it. Like, come on. Like, these guys legit hate each other, and you can't fabricate it enough to do that. And the fact that there is history, people are going to want to see if DC can do it, and especially if it happens at heavyweight is another aspect to the story. If I was a director, if I'm a story writer, and I'm like, what best story can I write? Going back to that same chapter that we've had before, that same storyline, it's not going to have the same interest. You got to have something else to kind of tweak a little bit. And right now, unfortunately for DC, the heavyweight angle is the only other way that makes sense.
You know what might have a big impact on whether this fight happens or not is the NSAC meeting on January 29th. And And I'm not talking about John Jones. I'm talking about Conor and Khabib. If for some reason Conor and Khabib both get like a year suspension and they're stuck out for the whole year,
that's a lot of money to make up.
The UFC is going to be needing money back.
I mean, that $1.5 billion that's eventually coming from ESPN helps, but that's over 5 years. They're like they got a big old paycheck, you know.
So they're going to need to make some revenue, and I bet they start going, John, you sure you don't want to move up to heavyweight? Like, it sure would be a big paycheck up there.
Makes same thing with, like, that whole Cyborg Nunes again, or Amanda versus, you know, even Amanda versus Shevchenko. I mean, like, that I don't think that did great numbers, right. But, I mean, at least there's a story there.
Listen, let's talk about Amanda Nunes, because this is the moment. That moment felt so big, man.
Unreal.
That felt bigger than any – I don't know, man. I don't know if – first of all, the fight was just nuts. I mean, the fact that Amanda Nunes just went in there and was like, you know what, Cyborg, we're going to – let's just dig in and throw down.
Yeah.
Unbelievable, right?
No one does that with Cyborg.
No one does that with Cyborg. Yeah. And just, I mean, to knock her out, you know, Mark Goddard was like right on the – should I go in? Boom.
He knew he would get knocked the fuck out if he stepped in there. Like, he was a little on the outside. He was like, I will get knocked out. I found as it started, once they started trading blows, when I went back and thought about it, I stopped breathing.
Yeah.
I found myself, I was holding my breath because it was just like, I was like, you know, and then there was a moment because I remember I collectively gasped after it was done. And I was just like, was I not breathing?
Probably
were. I was like, holy shit.
I had to stop. I had to stop typing. I couldn't type for a second. I'm just looking around the arena, just like looking at people's faces and going like, oh my God, just soaking in the reaction.
It was the picture perfect fight for Amanda. Not even, you can't even say like, oh, the game plan was just perfect. We worked it out. You know, there was no – it was – she just went in there and stood and banged with her and – but literally was more precise. It was like – you know, I talked about magnets earlier about pushing it. It literally looked like her hands were just drawn to her face. Like there was a string just pulling them into her face. It was so precise. I mean, granted, there was some – yes, you could probably say, oh, well, this looked like a haymaker, this, whatever. I mean, like – once she hit it and it hurt Cyborg, it was just finish. She was in complete finish mode, and it was picture perfect. It was beautiful. It was unbelievable. It was probably some of the best MMA that I've seen. You know, not even talking about like women's MMA or men's MMA. That was hands down just fucking incredible.
In terms of a 1 minute fight, among the best 1 minute. I mean, just so that was just
a dismantling.
Man.
It was better. It was a better dismantling than what Jones did to Gustafson.
Definitely.
Easily, like Jones dismantled Gustafson and just shut everything down.
Tactical brilliance.
Yeah,
this was just pure excitement. And Amanda Nunes, I know, has had this, you know, problem kind of becoming a star. You know, here's one thing that I think gets overlooked a lot, and I know a lot of people have said, you know, the UFC, I don't understand how they can't market her. Like, you know, you've got the first openly gay champion in history. Like, the thing is, like, Amanda doesn't want to represent the gay community. She doesn't want to be like a figurehead of the gay community.
And her sexuality shouldn't even be the angle. It's not like they're like, oh, hey, look at this new puppy over here. Like, just on her accolades and how she carries herself and her performances should be enough. I mean, I
agree, but I think it should be noted because I see it a lot where people are like, how stupid is the UFC? You've got the first openly gay champion in UFC history, and you're not pushing her that way.
Because people are doing the Nielsen numbers, and they're like, oh, my Lord, we're getting played in every gay bar everywhere. We're going to reach this whole new market.
Yeah, and just to be clear, I mean, we've had these conversations with her in various interviews. Like, it's not that she shies away from it, but it's just like – she makes it clear, like, that's not what she wants to be. You know, she doesn't want to be this lesbian figurehead or whatever.
That's it. And it's almost like people want to put a fucking asterisk on what she does because of it. You know, like, that's just who she is.
Right.
You know, some dudes like their girls, you know, and hey, they're a fucking champ. But nobody puts a fucking star and say, hey, look at this heterosexual dude. But I mean, I get it. I get the need for people to want to say, look what as well she's done. You know, she's living life how she wants, blah, blah, blah. But just on terms of what she does should be enough for the UFC.
And now I think it is. And now I think it is.
To realize that the fact that, I mean, she's Brazilian, but she speaks wonderful English.
It's getting better all the time.
We've never had a problem interviewing them. So we don't have that language barrier that sometimes has hurt us really sort of, I think, American population.
Her English might be better than Cyborg's now.
Yeah, why wouldn't it be?
You know?
I think so.
I mean, Cyborg speaks good English, too. She has more of an accent now,
right.
I think. You know what I mean? Like, I think Nunes' English might be better.
And it's funny because, you know, and now we interview him over and over. I don't even think about it. And I think when you get to a point where I don't ever worry about what I'm going to say not being understood, like, then we've reached a point, and like it's been that way with those two now for a while.
A long time, yeah.
You know, so I think for the fact that what I like about what she's doing now, and I think it'd be a way for if they really sort of embrace it, is she sort of embraced more now a lot of the social media stuff. She put a post of her drive around with the two belts in the back seat. The UFC should have retweeted it if they didn't already.
I think they did.
You know, like little things like that. You know, if they could start showing her personality. You know, I think so long people have seen her just like this killer, you know, that was kind of just off doing her thing. But realize that she's really a funny individual, you know. And even talking to Nina, you could tell that Nina's a fun person. And so you could tell there's a lot of love there. But to have two good people be attracted to each other, they got to be good people.
Yeah.
So if you think one's funny and you think the other's funny, it's probably like, wow, these are funny people.
Yeah.
Like, you don't. Shouldn't need an angle outside of anything else from another funny person or a good-natured person to really promote them. So, and when you look at the fact that now she's a fucking champ, she dismantled
the
most badass, dangerous, you know, the fact that now we have to change and alter, you know, who is the baddest motherfucker that's destroying in the women's division, and it was Cyborg, but now I have to change it and move her down a line.
I was gonna say, so is she the GOAT? Because here's the thing I'm struggling with, right? So I think the argument's very clear. I mean, you look at the names that she's beaten, man. She's beaten everybody: Rousey, Tate, Shevchenko, everybody that you would say is one of the best ever. You know, she's beat them all.
Right. I guess when I say move her down on, I'm looking at, like, the current listing.
Sure, pound for pound right now.
Pound for pound right now,
it's Amanda Nunes.
Look at that. When Cyborg, Carano, you know, Marluz Kunin. I mean, like, she defeated the Ronda Rouseys, the Misha Tates of her time.
That's why I'm having a hard time just saying, yes, automatically Amanda's. Her resume is sick. When you say, that, look at all these UFC champions. But Cyborg never had a chance to beat UFC champions because she wasn't in the UFC, and then she wasn't in a weight class. You know what I mean? So it's like.
And nobody's had a chance to. When you look at, like, nobody's even fought Cyborg like this. Cyborg has literally walked through everybody practically her whole career outside of that first loss that I think she took.
Yep.
So when I think of, like, the GOAT, I think of overall, when you look at, yes, you could look at the recent names, and of course I think people want to lean towards the more recent stars when they think about, you know, who was great and who was whatever. They want to think about the Rouseys, you know, but the fact of what Cyborg was able to do for so long and over the people she did and how devastatingly in the fashion that she did it, she's still my GOAT as for who was the greatest.
I kinda think so too.
But when I talk about now the rank, if I had to rank who is the best right now, I will look at the recent one and say right now between those two, Amanda is fighting better. So I put Amanda over her.
Yep.
I just don't think when you look at the overall history of what Amanda has done, she's reached the level of where I would say this is the greatest example of what is out there right now.
Yeah.
I think right now she is fighting the best out of what's going on out right now.
That's where I see it. But I think Amanda's definitely number one, you know, pound for pound, and we put her there in our rankings. She's definitely pound for pound number one. We put Cyborg at number two. But I think all-time GOAT, I may still say Cyborg right now. And I understand that she just lost, so people say, well, how can you?
Yeah.
But that's not how pound-for-pound rankings.
Give it
number one, pound-for-pound rankings are all theoretical anyway.
Right.
But to me, when you're talking about career GOAT-type rankings.
That's why I'm more thinking is like GOAT. And even you take, I think, and at least when I put it, I take, you know, the time frame of where it was, you know, how long that she's been doing it. And you're looking at the overall fashion. Like, Amanda's been in fights all through, like, long fights, deep fights. Some people, you know, still think that Shevchenko beat her.
Yes.
You know, like, she looked human. This performance against
Cyborg.
She lost to Cyborg.
She lost to Sergey.
Yeah, I mean, the performance against Cyborg made her look superhuman, and she did that, and it was absolutely incredible. She's fighting on such a different level right now. So when I look at the current, where they're fighting, right now, she is the best female fighter right now that is performing.
She's the greatest right now.
But I don't put her as the overall, but You know, and that, I think it just takes time for that to let her be a dominating champ. Let her keep destroying everybody. And then
yeah,
that
because
will
another
switch
couple
for me.
Wins, and all of a sudden, now you say.
And especially then if it goes to a rematch again and she beats it, you know, it's hard to not. But when you look at who's the current best, she is over Cyborg in my book because of it. But also, too, we've been saying, what is it going to take for Cyborg to lose? It's a Cyborg running into somebody now. Cyborg. She's not a diminished Cyborg, but we always said like it would take another fighter coming up to her level and then moving forward.
Right.
In terms of skill set and who's growing, you know, Amanda has a trajectory going much more upwards.
Yep.
Whereas Cyborg still has room to grow, and I think she's been working on her cardio. She's been working on these things. She's just been so dominating that when it comes to in my mind of who now is trajecting upwards and who is either plateauing, it's more in Amanda's favor. But granted, even a plateaued, and I don't think she's like, I'm not saying she's done or she's over the hill. She could be a plateaued Chris Cyborg and literally still demolish
still
everybody
a lot
else.
Of people. Still wreck a
she
lot
She literally
of
can
people.
Destroy everyone else. You put her in there with Megan Anderson, whatever. I like Megan, but Cyborg, I think, would crush her.
I do too.
You know, I mean, Amanda would crush Megan, but I mean,
Megan's got size. She got strength.
She's got great size.
She doesn't move that fast.
It was very interesting that the leg kick against Kat, like that was just that. If people want to talk about flukes,
that was unfortunate.
That's a fluke. That was unfortunate. I mean, but she did what she needed to
do. Yeah, I mean,
you know?
Can't blame. You know, she threw a
no.
Kick,
there was nothing wrong with it. You know, the people that wanted to try to say like, oh, a toe is like a finger. What the fuck are you talking about?
I know.
That is just so bizarre. Like, that is not anywhere close to somebody, like, putting their outstretched hands and putting it. She threw a strike that happened to be with her foot.
Yeah.
Her opponent put her head back, tried to evade it, but it just literally perfectly
hit
the eye.
If she threw a snapping front kick with her toes pointed out, which would be damn near impossible to do,
yeah,
then maybe we could talk. You know what I mean?
That would be so painful. You would probably break your toes.
Yeah,
to try to
exactly. So, yeah, to anybody that says that, it's ridiculous.
Oh, that's just, yeah.
All right, well, so look, so here's what I'm curious about, too, because it sounds like you're on the same board with me in rankings. That's no disrespect to Nunes. I think a couple more wins. She is the greatest of all time, but I still look at Cyborg there right now. Do you run this fight back right away?
Well, I mean, for Cyborg.
Of course, Cyborg wants to.
Cyborg wants to, but I can see where Amanda, I would think, has the comfort. She took some good shots, but why not? But, I mean, she's never going to – I mean, who else possibly outside of maybe, like –
Well, there's nobody at 145.
Right.
There's nobody at 145.
But even at, you know, well, now that Shevchenko's got her own belt, so she doesn't need to go.
At 35, you got Kellen Vieira, and then you've got the upcoming fight between Aspen Ladd and Holly Holm. Yeah, that's it.
And while those are great fights, they don't get me as excited for sure as Cyborg.
Right.
But it's tough because
I mean, she fought Jermaine Derradami, but that was like 5 years ago.
Yeah,
so maybe
bantamweight
throw
needs
Jermaine
to be defended.
It does. I do kind of like the idea of her keeping both belts, though. I don't think you have to strip her. You know,
especially because one is in a sense is like a non.
Well, that's it.
Division.
Dan Lambert came on MMA Junkie Radio and he made the case. And he's like, look, well, first of all, either division. You know, he's like, look, you look at Daniel Cormier, light heavyweight and heavyweight. Dude, you got monsters. You know what I mean? Like, you know, now we just said we don't know that there's big money fights, but there's still big fights. But, yes, at Bantamweight right now, you've got Kellen Vieira who should be next up. I think she's still recovering. But if she's healthy, she should be next up. The Aspen Ladd-Holly Holm winner would be in a pretty damn good position. And then, like I said, Jermaine Derradami, she's there as well. You know, maybe she's in there. So you've got a couple people, but nobody that's like, it's got to be right now. It's got to be right now.
No.
And at featherweight, there's nobody. I mean, you could say Megan Anderson, but, I mean, it's not that she's done something that's just wowed you, but it's just because she's the only person there.
Yeah.
You just had Macy Kiesan.
They
got to
do something with that division.
You just had Macy win the Ultimate Fighter and immediately drop down to bantamweight. So I don't think you have to be in a hurry to take the title away from Amanda Nunes at 145 because if she goes and doesn't defend it for a year, so what? You know? So what?
Well, that's crazy. I'm looking at the UFC's website.
They don't even have rankings.
They don't have a featherweight win.
They don't have enough people for rankings.
That's just crazy. So, yeah, how can you worry about stripping somebody if you can't even fucking put the division
exactly
on the website?
I think like, you do. I think you do. Do Cyborg, Megan Anderson.
That would be good.
You know, then you have a fight.
That would be a fun one just because both of them have been asked for it, and that was a fight that we thought we were
exactly
already going to see.
So do Cyborg and Megan Anderson while Amanda Nunes goes back down and fights Ketlin Vieira, assuming that she gets healthy. If she's not healthy, then she fights the winner of Ladd and Holm. And then after Cyborg and Megan get done, then you do it again. And if it's the rematch with Cyborg, cool. You got a backstory. If it's not, if it's Megan, well, okay, cool. Then you got Megan in there. So I don't think you have to run it back right away, but I think that's what you do. I think if you do that, I think everybody's happy.
Yeah, especially with Shevchenko kind of leaving the bantamweight division, and now she's got the flyweight on check. Yeah, you're right. I mean, and that'd be interesting because it'd be if Megan goes in there, Megan, whatever, goes in there and say that is a good test. Maybe what if Cyborg doesn't recover well from this?
Yeah.
You know, what if Megan goes in there and just fucking starches her, catches her and realizes, oh, hey, that's the key. Nobody stands and bangs with her. She doesn't like to get hit, you know.
And if you can be bold enough to stand in there and do it,
you know, she's a big girl. She's got good size on her. I mean, like she probably can throw pretty darn hard. You know, Amanda is just a freak of nature.
Yeah,
she throws a lot harder than what her size belies. Like she is just a strong motherfucker. I could see if Megan went in there and would beat Cyborg, then maybe we'd have to question where Cyborg is now, you know, and is she trajecting downwards? But,
it's true.
There's just even the Holm Ladd fight. I mean, I'm not excited about that. I mean, no offense to them, but it's like, I mean, Amanda's in a weird spot, you know, she's kind of fallen into that role where, like, you know, Cyborg was, where it's like, you know, what matchup is exciting for her because she just tends to sort of just beat the shit out of everybody.
Yep. It's an interesting spot. I hope she gets to defend both belts. I don't think we need to be in a rush to get rid of featherweight. And I think there's still fights to be had there. So, anyway, we'll see. Michael Chiesa, man, what a slick submission over Carlos Condit, dude. The one-handed Kimura. And the whole week, it's so weird how when guys move up, immediately you're like, how the hell did you ever make 155? I mean, when he's standing next to Carlos Condit, you know, we said going in, we were like, hey, when they face off for the first time, I think people are going to be surprised that Chiesa's not going to look small. I think Chiesa looked bigger than Carlos, to be honest with you. And impressive win for Chiesa. And,
it's all beard.
It
was all the beard.
And, and I feel bad for Condit, man. It's still one of the most exciting fighters. I think such a fan favorite, but has had a run of losses, man. It's disappointing to see. Corey Anderson got the win over Ilir Latifi. Corey's, man, I'll admit it, I underrate Corey Anderson. I mean, he's not always the most exciting guy sometimes, you know what I mean? I think that might be part of it. You know, you thought about Ilir being able to come in there and put some hands on him or, you know, put some action to him, and Corey just exhausted him basically and outworked him and made him do overtime and beasted him 25-8 and all that stuff.
Ilir, he just didn't look the same from the last performance. I mean, I don't know if it was just maybe decided I don't need to do the cardio for this one. He just, that last performance before that, I want to say that was one of the ones where I picked against him, and then he looked so good. And I was like, oh, okay, I'm not going to. Yeah, he got the submission over OSP. I was like, all right, man, he's fighting on another level. Okay, I'm going to get him. And he beat Tyson Pedro before that. I was like, I'm going to vote for him. And then this version is the version that lost to, like, Bader.
I know.
You know, I mean.
It's so I agree. There's, like, inconsistencies on fight night. And it's like when he's on, he is a world beater. And when he's not.
And you listen to him during fight week, you believe it. Yeah. Like, he says all the right shit. And he is such an impressive-looking specimen that you're just like, oh, my God. God, this dude is a beast. Kind of got that sort of look that, like, Hector Lombard, where you're just like, this is a scary individual. His neck is
so
as
true.
Wide as my leg, you know?
So true.
Mean, like, and then he went out there, and he just looked human. And I guess credit to Corey. Corey just pieced him up, man. Yep. And that, I don't know. I was really surprised. And it's, you know, but I always get a little more iffy or pissy when I pick wrong. I totally pick.
You get mad at the guy.
I know. It's like, how could you do that to me? How could you do that to me? I know your family might be upset, but you hurt my picks.
As you were cruising 10 picks out in front of Dan Tom and still just trying to.
Still hoping for everyone.
Crazy, man. Alex Volkanovski, What a fucking fight with Chad Mendez, dude. I mean, what a great result. That round two, I was telling the guys, you know, we're doing all of our end-of-year awards, and I was like, dude, that might be one of the rounds of the year right there. You know, both guys get hurt, you end up getting the finish. Just a phenomenal fight, man. Volkanovski, of course, he's been a favorite of ours as well, man. You know, personality to go along with skills, and has made huge strides in the UFC. And to beat a guy like Chad Mendez, I mean, that is a meaningful, meaningful victory.
Yeah, that's a huge one.
Super impressed by Volkanovski. And should say, you know, the reports that that Chad Mendez retired afterwards, he hasn't made a public statement. We did reach out to his management team. His management team said, listen, he's actually on vacation, I believe in Montana.
Which is good.
Just
go hunt, think about shit, and don't make any rash decision. I mean, he'd been away from it for so long, you know, and then to come back, you know, and then maybe not have the performances that he wants, you know. But I like the dude. I mean, but from everything I've heard, you know, his little hunting tours and
supposedly
the hunting
doing
thing,
pretty good, right?
He's doing pretty good, you know, so...
You know, I mean, listen, if you can to have a business, make a living and not get punched in the face, and
why not?
You know, he made a lot of money, you know, fighting Connor. So, but I do believe that Chad Mendez is still right there, man. I don't believe, you know, that we're looking at a diminished Chad Mendez where it's like, oh my God, you lost to Volkanovski. You know, you can't compete anymore, man. I think Volkanovski is just one of the new elite.
He is. That's why I and only one or two other people from our staff picked him.
You rolled with him?
You know, his fucking striking and his power, man, like, Chad, like, even in the second round, like, his face was wearing it. Like, Volkanovski, man, he is strong. His striking, if people aren't talking about his striking, I think they should be paying attention to that. I mean, because he is dangerous. I think he could be a future champ, for sure.
I like it. I like it. He's got the confidence. He says, listen... I like Max Holloway. He's like, I respect him. He's a warrior. He's like, but I think because he's a warrior, my style is terrible for him. You know, I think that he'll try to stand and bang because that's what he wants to do, and he won't realize that he's making a mistake, you know, but that's just kind of the warrior he is. So, dude, listen, he's not far off. I think, you know, I think he's got to be right there. You know, maybe, you know, a fight against the Aldo Moicano winner or something along those lines, but he's got to be very, very close to the
title. He's the one that used to play rugby, right?
Yeah, like 210 pounds.
Dude,
little
he was
stocky
a fucking
little,
beast. And when I see him now, I'm like, that's your brother, right? Like,
that
can't
so
be
crazy,
you.
Man.
That's your brother.
So crazy.
You know, like, those rugby dudes are nuts, man.
Walt Harris picked up a split decision win over Andrei Arlovski. No disrespect. Obviously, we're huge Andrei Arlovski fans, but I don't know how you got 27-30 Andrei in that. That was a weird split decision. But that was the biggest win of Walt Harris's career. Not the most exciting fight ever, but a huge win for Walt Harris. We talked about Megan Anderson. Peter Yan, man, does he look like the real deal. That guy is dangerous. Keep your eye on him. He is the real deal. Ryan Hall with that submission of BJ Penn. Beautiful submission, beautiful technique.
Just crazy.
You know, I guess in a lot of ways, maybe the best case scenario. I mean, it's. I don't like seeing BJ Penn lose, but I guess at least it wasn't BJ Penn getting his ass kicked by somebody. You know, it's.
No, just him almost losing the loss of his knee.
Who needs a knee?
Dude, that was a nuts. Like, that was the kind of thing that we've seen Ryan just sort of drop down and immediately start. Trying to pull people in their guard into his guard, and it's like nobody's going to do that. But for the fact that he was like, "All right, fuck it, you stand there, I'm coming to you."
Beautiful.
You know that the way he rolled into that and was able to secure that, it was nuts. I wanted to just roll it back and replay in slow motion, just to like, how did you? Like he had to have drilled that so many times to make it look so flawless, and it was just unreal.
Yep.
And the way that he did it so quickly that. It really, like, BJ didn't have a chance to really sort of tap. Like, he literally could have had his knee just get destroyed. And Ryan even said afterwards, he heard it pop or crunch, some sort of noise. And you're just like, oh, my God. Because when you watch it happen so fast, it's like, how do you even have time to know what's about to happen to your knee when it rolled into it? But that's what we knew what would happen, you know, like... knew that was the possibility of some crazy shit, you know, and that's why people don't want to roll with that dude. You know, I know they said like, oh no, there's no problem, you know, with him getting fights. It's like, brother.
Well, you know, yeah, in fairness, I think that was. I think Dana was taken a little aback by that because I think in his mind he's like, "What do you mean? Like we got nobody." You're right. Nobody wants to fight Ryan Hall because it's like if you beat him, you're like, "Yeah, you beat the dude that just knows jiu-jitsu." And if you lose to him, you know, you're like, "How'd you get tapped out by?" You know, he's not an intimidating looking guy. He's not a guy in the poster where you go, "Oh shit, that dude's the baddest dude on the planet." You know, so. Right. I Dana was surprised, but I don't think Dana's very involved in booking the prelims where he doesn't understand that people are like, I don't want to fight that
dude. I bet if Dana had a fucking lineup of fighters, six line fighters on a sheet, which one's Ryan Hall? I guarantee he probably wouldn't have been able to pick him out of the fucking lineup. Let's be honest.
Yeah, exactly. So, I think in Dana's mind, it's like, dude, of course we don't have trouble matching people up. You know, that's what we do here.
We have 500 people on the roster. We can find him a fight.
I understood where he was coming from, but I doubt he's had to be very involved with actually matching up Ryan Hall. So, that was an incredible moment. Nathaniel Wood looks like the real deal, man. People over in Europe have been preaching about him for a while, and he does look like the real deal. Uriah Hall, man, the great comeback over Bevon Lewis. Just incredible finish.
But that was great.
That was amazing. Then the great post-fight speech afterwards where he kind of opened up.
Bevon Lewis, that's somebody to keep an eye on.
But that's the thing. That's one where you go, dude, he was winning that whole fight.
He was
he got clipped,
winning.
But
and
he
even
was
Uriah, the way he even talked about it afterwards, he gave him a lot of credit. But you could tell he was just – it felt like – because Bevon and his – like speech when we talked to him earlier in the week was almost like, I think Uriah's done. I think he's on his way out, you know, and not that Uriah took that personally, but I think he went when that fight started, when it was going on, I think there was probably that moment and even in his mind where he was like, this is the younger version of me who is throwing very, very hard and catch me. But then he pulled it out, you know, and in a testament to his heart. And we saw that, you know, in the emotion that came out after it and stuff, but take nothing away from Lewis. I mean, like, that kid is
he's somebody to watch.
Dangerous. That was amazing. For him to do what he did, and he went straight at Uriah.
Yeah.
Like, it was so impressive. And he's got great size. I mean, he's gonna be definitely somebody to keep an eye on for sure.
Yeah, no question about it. Curtis Millender picked up the impressive decision win over C.R. Desarda. Curtis Millender continues to impress, man. That guy's good. Because C.R. is always going to come and brawl. But Curtis just out-techniqued him, no question about it. And then Montel Jackson started out the night with the quick submission win over Brian Kelleher. Yeah.
Dude, that was a great – it was a great card.
It was a phenomenal card.
I thought it was a great card.
For all the bullshit.
For all the bullshit, you know, not even taking into account, you know, like nobody wants to pay for just, you know, pay-per-view card without, like, the big major marquee ones. But when you look top to bottom on this, it was a great night of fights.
It was great.
It was really good. I mean, look at it. Start out with a submission, then a decision, boo-hoo, but it was a good fight, then a knockout, then a submission, then a submission, then a TKO, then a TKO, then another good decision, then a TKO, then a decision, then a submission, and then a knockout, and then a TKO.
It was great.
That's fucking awesome night. Like, how can anybody – I mean, granted, we never know that what's going to happen, you know, when you're looking at a card, you know, whether you're going to pull the wallet out. But after the fact, when you look at it and you're like, wow, that was impressive.
It was solid.
That was a solid night.
It was good. It was a great night, man.
Sucked
no
about all the moving around and shit and then have to take it because it would have been great if it was here in Vegas.
Would have been great to just have a home game. Would have been great for you guys to have a tent that had fully functioning power at all times and a heater.
Not a giant trash bag out in the fluttering wind. That was the comments that everybody kept saying. It was like, why are we in this giant trash bag? Because it was like black plastic that just kept flapping, and we got it a little bit colder, but the way that it moved, it literally looked like somebody took Glad trash bags and just made it around an A-frame or whatever, and then here we are. But you know, yeah, whatever.
Dinner was
good, though.
The arena, getting into the arena, like, security guards, like, no, this is closed. And, like, well, what do you mean? It's just, I mean, it's what happens when you scramble to put an event together in 4 days.
Yeah, and the security's like, I wasn't even supposed to be working this. You know, I heard some guy, and he was like, we were going to be off the whole week, you know, and then now we're doing this, but it's okay. He didn't really sound country like that.
I was like the country dude.
They brought
in LA.
They brought me in from Tennessee just to cover this event. I don't know what I think about this here city, them the city slickers. I parked my buggy out back.
Oh,
What it was a great Tennessee. Night. Good night of it was good night of fights.
All right, last thing.
Yeah, that was much more southern than Tennessee. That was like some serious Georgia, Alabama.
It was. Last thing, this Woodley Covington Usman triangle. What do you think happens here,
that's
man?
That's a sexy triangle. That's a sexy love triangle.
What do you think happens here? It sounds like Woodley's finally in to fight in March, but he only wants Covington. Usman's not going to be a backup fighter again. That's for damn sure. And Dana wants to do Usman Woodley, but Covington feels like he's getting dicked over. Woodley only wants to face Covington. What you got? Any
out of those two? I mean, that's the one that I mean. When we're talking again about heat and where the casual people are going to tune in.
Woodley Covington,
yeah. Hands down. Yeah. But as for a fight that I think would be interesting to see. How the techniques play out and what strategies they go in, I think the Woodley Usman is much more interesting in that. I mean, to me personally, I think Woodley just puts it to Covington.
Yeah.
I mean, I think Covington has good striking. He has a lot of heart, and he has a good chin. But man, what Woodley was able to do to Till, and Till had so much power, and just I would pick Till over, and this is my reason. I would put Till over Covington.
Yep.
And so to see what Woodley did to Till so recently,
yeah.
It's not like it was like, oh, that fight happened 2 years ago. You know, he might not be the same. It's still fresh in my mind, so I would pick him. But also seeing the fact that Usman likes to keep his distance gauge when he's going to try to go in there and try to command up against the cage and try to go for those takedowns. To see the two wrestlers go in there, you know, it's tough because I like Usman a lot. I think Woodley probably has more power and maybe more precision on his striking when he's doing it. So I would probably lean towards Woodley on that. But that, to me, I think that fight is good for the division, and there's a lot of questions I want to see answered between those two. So I kind of want to see that one. But in terms of just the shit talking that would happen during fight week and all the craziness, it's Covington Woodley, hands down.
I feel bad because I've always been a Covington guy. I know that some of the things he says are a little goofy or whatever, but it's
a character.
He's playing a character.
He's always been nice and respectful when we've been there.
1,000%.
So when you see him go into these modes, then you're like, you kind of want to pull him aside and be like, bro, like you could ease up. But it's like, no, I get it. I get what you're doing. But you want to kind of pull him after the interview and be like, bro, what the fuck were you saying there? You know, because he doesn't act like you're like, where did that come from?
It's so true, man. So he's playing a character. And I feel like he's done everything that he's been asked of along the way, right? You know, I mean, he's the one that got there. He got the interim title. He should have been given that chance, and he had some medical issues and all this.
That was shitty. He deserves like he it just
dicked,
for that.
I feel like he got dicked
he
over.
He got dicked.
At the same time, Usman has been the guy out here going, you know, and I like Usman too, man. Obviously, we got the Dallas ties there, and you know, I just like him as well. And you know, I did some commentary work with him, so I got to know him a little bit, you know, behind the scenes. And he's a good dude, man.
People give him hate for some reason that I don't think
I don't understand it either.
I don't think it's deserved.
I understand why people
Woodley. I mean, like, people hate on him too. Like, come the fuck on. Like,
I understand why people hate Colby. I totally get it.
Oh, well, I mean,
he's
putting it out there.
He's asking for that
hate.
He's
asking for it.
I don't understand why people hate Conor. I really don't. I think he got dicked over on the 30% comment because Dana misinterpreted it.
Yeah.
And then when Dana laid it out there, you know, he got burned. So I feel bad because one of these two is going to get screwed over. I mean, Kamaru, if you look at what he did in 2018, you know, he went 3-0 in 2018. Yep. You know, so he probably deserves, based on the immediacy of recent accomplishments, you know what I mean? But Colby already had it promised and taken away, you know?
And that's probably – well, that and the heat between the two of I know what the fight week would do and you know, in our selfish, like, just terms of numbers. Like, people are going to want to – would rather click on Colby
day.
Talking shit than two legit fighters just talking legit about a fight. You know?
I feel bad because one of the two is going to get screwed over here.
Well, at least temporarily. But you're right. But I think when it goes to the fact that an interim champ was stripped without given a real chance
that's
to do
garbage.
Anything.
That's garbage.
That's
such garbage.
Like, so I want that wrong fixed
that's
first
true.
Because what's the point of giving out interim titles for your fucking – to save your cards – if you're just going to turn right back around and prove that it's worth nothing that you could take away at any moment.
I agree.
So that's the only reason. But yeah, as for which fight I think is a more competitive fight, hands down, I think it's Usman and Woodley. I think that fight has a lot more questions as for who's going to do what. I mean, I could pretty much already see how the fight's going to play out with Colby and them. So I don't know, but that's the one that personally I want to see that one more, just because I know that the shit talk's going to be spectacular.
I hopefully those three all two fights happen between those three some way. You know what I'm saying? Like I hate to say.
Oh, you mean like this guy's going to fight this guy?
Yeah, because because you hate to say, because if you say, well, hopefully we see Woodley versus both guys this year. Well, that means you're already picking him to beat whoever the first one he faces is.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? So all I'm saying is between those three guys, I hope we see two fights this year, and it happens in rather, and I hope one of them happens in March so that we get plenty of time, because those guys are all deserving of being in that discussion. So.
I agree.
All right. Well, listen, man. It's a new year.
Yeah, and we ran for a good, solid.
We chatting
and a half.
Long time. People are probably tired of hearing. We didn't have any audio this week because it was the holidays, and we were kind of taking some time off. I'm on vacation next week, but
nice.
Just doing a little staycation.
It's nice. The year rolled over, man. Got all those brand new fresh.
That's
vacation
it, man.
Days.
I never use all my vacation days, so I was like, you know what? It's a week with no UFC, no Bellator.
Yeah.
I said, let me just go ahead and burn some days. Take care of some stuff around the house. Stuff
I got
like
more
that.
Days than I thought I did when I looked. I wasn't quite sure. I didn't know if I was going to get stuck with like 15 days or whatever. But I did the numbers. I think I got 25 days as well.
See, there you go. So
I'm happy.
So yeah,
I'm
going
to go on
staycation.
I used 9 days last year.
Yeah,
I think
I'm terrible at using my vacation days. So I figure
people,
out
if you have vacation days, don't do what we do. Use your vacation days.
Don't be an idiot like us. Use your days. They're yours. You can't get them back.
You can't get them back.
But we'll still do it. We'll still do it. And then, like I said, my promise in 2019 is more and a half content. Starting with Brooklyn.
And I think we'll still keep with giving our picks for Patreon people. We're going to give that earlier in the week.
Yeah, we're going to focus on some stuff for Patreon and do some new things. So
thank you for those that have
been patient, stuck with us.
Yeah, been patient and stick that.
It's been
every
tough.
Little bit helps. I mean, I know even though, but I think you guys realize it. Everything that you give, it helps, and I hope that in some way, we'll pay it forward better this year. Giving you extra little stuff that we can try to, you guys help keep the lights on, and as for the rest, everybody, just the support, listening. This is a new year, man. We're gonna do some good shit.
That's right.
And
just make sure you support us. Tell friends about us. Review us on iTunes. Do
and love
stuff.
Nemira Vodka.
Yes. In the meantime, thanks for listening.